Wir fehlen Hare Krishna. Welcome to Bhakti Sangha conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Krishnanand Prabhu with us to enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 3rd chapter, sloka number 18. Before handing over the call to Prabhuji, I would like to ask Aditi Mataji to go ahead and give a brief introduction about Prabhuji. Mataji, please take over.
Yes. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna, dear devotees, please accept my humble obeisances. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Guru Maharaj ki jai. Once again, I'm very fortunate to introduce Keshavanand Prabhuji this morning. And this is a brief introduction for him. So Dr. Keshavanand Prabhuji was a professional doctor for many years, and he's now a practicing monk. So in the last 20 years, he has conducted extensive research and authored books in the field of science and spirituality. He feels the rift between science and spirituality must disappear to bring peace in the world. If spirituality is a superstition and a myth, science is materialistic and atheistic. A new approach to life is needed today that can bring the best of both. Science must be re-embraced, spirituality, and be humble to admit its defects, flaws, and ignorance. And spirituality must base itself on sound, scientific, and rational ideas. Keshavanand Prabhuji has studied both Vedic and Western philosophy. Besides learning Sanskrit, he also learned Bengali, Gujarati, Marathi, and Kannada, known about other traditions. His persistent endeavor in the field of science and spirituality has enabled him to come up with seminars on diverse topics like science and the Vedas, mind and machine, science fails to explain life, consciousness, and beyond, etc. That he has presented in various colleges in India, Europe, and America. Under the guidance of his spiritual master, His Holiness Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj, he has also started Gurukula, a traditional system of Vedic education in Punjab, India, where children learn the ancient Vedic culture and values. Besides, he has started a farm community. The community has a traditional way of living with mud huts and thatch roofs with cows, and of course, farming. The communities will set a model for the world to show how to live life based on simple living, high thinking. Thank you, Dandavat. Pranam to Keshavanand Prabhuji. Over to you, Mataji.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you for the introduction. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Please accept our obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for giving your very valuable time and association to us this morning and enlightening us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Please take over the call, Prabhuji. Welcome to the call. Hare Krishna.
Okay, so we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is 7th canto, 3rd chapter, 18th verse. Yeah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is 7:18. Adraksham aham etam te hitsaram mahat adbhutam damsha bhakshita dehasya pranahyas tishu serate. Synonyms: adraksham have personally seen. Aham I etam this te your hitsaram power of endurance. Mahat, very great, adbhutam, wonderful, damsha, bhakshita, eaten by bombs, and hands, dehasya, whose body, prana, the life, he indeed has tissue in the bones, sherate, is taking shelter. Translation: I have been very much astonished to see your endurance, in spite of being eaten and bitten by all kind of bombs, and hands, you are keeping your life circulating within your bones. Certainly, this is wonderful. Purport: it appears that the soul can exist even through the bones, as shown by personal example of Hiranyakashipu, and great yogis are in samadhi even when their bodies are buried and the skin, marrow, blood, and so on have all been eaten. If only their bones remain, they can exist in a transcendental position. Very recently, an archaeologist published findings indicating that not Jesus Christ, after being buried, was exhumed and then he went to Kashmir. There have been many actual examples of yogis being buried in trance, exhumed alive in good condition several hours later. A yogi can keep himself alive in transcendental state, even if buried, not only for many days, but for many years. Interesting. इंटरेस्टिंग. ये लाइट बंद करने वाली थी चला गई, अदरवाइज दिखा रहा है. या सो एक्चुअली ब्रह्मा जी या लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा ही केम टू सी हिरण्यकशिपुस. लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा वाज वेरी इंप्रेस्ड बाय हिरण्यकशिपुस ऑस्टेरिटीज एंड शिल प्रभुपाद ही हिमसेल्फ सेज अदराक्षम अहम एतम ते. अदराक्षम मीन्स आई हैव पर्सनली सीन, और अदराक्षम मीन्स द्राक्षम मीन्स टू सी अ मीन्स विच इज विच हैज नॉट बीन सीन. So Brahmaji says, Mahat Adbhutam, this kind of austerity has not been seen by anybody. So he was very impressed by the austerities of Hiranyakashipu. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says that even from demons we can learn how to be austere. Of course, and another point is that the other flip side of the coin is even demons can do austerity. So what's the value of doing austerity? That's another flip side. Because if they can do, then what's the point? Then that means God is not impressed by austerities. Because even they can do. So God is impressed by something which no one can do, especially demons. That is devotion. So although Hiranyakashipu, but so for Hiranyakashipu, we can see that we can learn how to be austere, but this austerity, what we see in demons, that we can take encouragement from them, and then we can apply that same principle in devotion. That's what we can do. Just like Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said we can learn even from materialists. I mean, Srila Prabhupada was crossing the road in America, and then he saw a girl standing on the opposite side of the street, and she was like wearing some mini skirt in winter season. It was snowing. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you should learn from her how to be determined. She's so determined to show her body. We should be so determined to please Krishna. That's the whole idea. So there are two flip sides of this whole story of austerity. Although Brahmaji is very astonished by seeing austerities of Hiranyakashipu. He's not, I mean, he's impressed and astonished by the severity of the austerity which Hiranyakashipu did. But he was not at all, he was not happy by that. Because it was simply, Krishna says, anybody who does austerity, they simply torture their body and torture super soul within the body. If it is not prescribed by scriptures. Even if it is prescribed by scriptures, if it is not aimed towards satisfying Vishnu, it's nonsense. So, and why was Brahma so astonished? Hrit saram. Damsha bhakshita dehase. Hiranyakashipu's body was being eaten by worms and ants. And his muscles and blood vessels and just bones remained. That's quite amazing. Hiranyakashipu had put his soul in the bones. Now, how this is possible, nobody knows. I mean, scientifically and medically, it's impossible. But by yogic power, it's possible. By yoga, they circulate their life airs in bones. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, there are many yogis who go in samadhi, and then you can bury them alive, and then after many days or many years, you can take them out and they'll be alive again. So that's the power of yoga. So yoga, Vyasadeva mentions in Bhagavatam, Yamadi yoga pataya kama loba hatmu mukunda seva yadva tathatma dhana shamyati. Vyasadeva says, well, yoga is, I mean to say, he says by yoga you can get mental control, you can get mental control, and you can also what do we say you can also get powers, but at the same time, if you don't serve Krishna, mukunda sevayadvat tathatma dhana shamyati, your mind will never be satisfied and you must fall down. That's the whole idea. So yoga has power, and even demons, they learn this all science, and they practice yoga. Hiranyakashipu, it seems that Hiranyakashipu was very expert in all these kind of yogic powers. Demons are more expert in yoga. And that is why, and also it seems demons also like yoga very much. And that shows that the whole Western world is demoniac. You know, they like yoga a lot. They like yoga a lot. So yoga and so many classes of yoga. So they like all these kind of things because yoga promises good health, good mental strength. Yoga promises power. So demons like that. Yes, we want it. But devotees are not interested in this yoga. I mean, devotees can practice yoga for health, some kind of yogic asanas. That's okay, pranayama. But they are interested in yoga. They're interested in God. They're interested in devotion. That's what devotees are interested in too. So anytime you see, I mean to say, whole Western world, whole outside India, everybody is so infatuated by because yoga promises so many benefits in the life. And who doesn't want benefit? Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a book from, Prem Pradeep. And in Prem Pradeep, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that, what does he write? He writes that yoga is a process. Yoga is a process. And it is mentioned in scriptures, by yoga you can realize Paramatma. It is mentioned. It is not something, hidden fact in yogic Upanishads. You can realize Paramatma, you can come in contact with Super Soul. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, but there are so many pitfalls in the process. In Prem Pradeep, he explains all these things. He says, well, when a yogic practitioner starts and his aim is to realize Super Soul, what happens in between is he gets perfect health. So when he gets perfect health, his whole entire aim changes. And then he starts opening hospitals and, you know, he goes into that kind of reforming the health of the society. Or if he gets powers, he gets entangled in those powers and he forgets the aim, that to realize Super Soul is the aim of life. Or if he comes in mode of goodness, he's trapped into that mode of goodness and he's trapped into that peace and satisfaction. And like this, there's a whole list. So he says at every step of yoga, so it's Ashtanga Yoga. Yoga has 8 steps. Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Dhyan, Dharna, Samadhi. Dharna, Dhyan, Samadhi. So 8 steps. And at every step, there is an obstacle. So that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, why to practice yoga? There's no need to practice yoga. You practice bhakti yoga, you practice devotion. So, yeah, I mean, to say, prana hi asti su sherate. But Hiranyakashipu, it seems he was very expert, and Hiranyakashipu became expert in yoga, such a perfection in yoga that his life years were circulating in bones, such a perfection. And what was the inspiration behind this whole tapasya, what he was doing? The inspiration was to actually take revenge from Vishnu. That was inspiration. His elder brother was killed. Hiranyaksha was killed by Vishnu. And he wanted to take revenge. And that's why he did all this tapasya. So you can imagine the motive behind his tapasya. First of all, his whole tapasya was complete torture for the Super Soul. And second of all, the motive was to actually to really not only torture Super Soul but kill him. That was the motive. And Hiranyakashipu got successful. And Brahma got impressed. By the way, Brahma was not really impressed by Brahma was of course Brahma was impressed by the determination what what Hiranyakashipu showed. He was really impressed by that. And that's okay. But Brahma came there to give a boon to Hiranyakashipu, and that was something curse in disguise, because boon was a curse in disguise, because he wanted that Brahma, Hiranyakashipu should die. Hiranyakashipu should become really proud and arrogant of the boon which Brahma was going to give. And because of that arrogance, he will do so many offenses against Vaishnavas, and then Vishnu will kill him. So to actually escalate his death, Brahma came there. Otherwise, why would Brahma come there? In fact, Brahma, Hiranyakashipu asked for a boon that he should not die in the morning, evening, and you know, outside, inside, and not in night and day, and blah blah blah, whatever it is. And Brahma, he was in a fix, and he gave that boon. And later, when Krishna came in form of Lord Narasimhadeva and he killed Hiranyakashipu, he actually reprimanded Brahma. He told Brahma, "Brahma, why actually you gave this boon to him? And such a chaos he created. Why did you first of all go and give your darshan to him? And if you give darshan, then you'll be in a fix. And he'll ask for a boon and have to give him." So that was the logic of Lord Krishna when he gave darshan to Brahmaji. Lord Krishna, yeah, Lord Krishna, when he gave darshan to Hiranyakashipu, when he killed Hiranyakashipu, he gave darshan to all ten gods. So that's the whole point there. Why this whole question of Brahmaji becoming impressed by Hiranyakashipu's tapasya, giving him darshan, giving him a moon. Krishna said it's a big mistake. If you would have impressed by his tapasya, you would have just seen from your own loka why you should go and give him a darshan, and then give him a stupid boon so that he becomes such a madman. That's external. My internal is, Brahma knew what he was doing. He was doing on the order of Lord Vishnu. He gave darshan and he gave boon to escalate the death of Hiranyakashipu, and also, of course, the internal reason was Jaya Vijaya and the moment to fight Vishnu, and he knew all these things, so he came and gave that boon. But anyway, the idea of this verse is Adraksham aham etam te hit saram. Brahmaji said, I have seen many yogis and tapasvis doing tapasya, but I have not seen such a tapasya done by anybody except you, Hiranyakashipu. In fact, Hiranyakashipu's tapasya became so powerful that a fire emerged from his head bones, and that fire went to heaven, and the whole heaven was about to burn. And that's why Brahmaji came there to stop him from him to do tapasya. That was his main reason. Otherwise, whole heaven would have been burnt by his tapasya. Even Dhruv, when Dhruv was doing tapasya, it is said that when Dhruv was doing tapasya, then he became so heavy that the earth was about to shift from its orbit. And that's why Vishnu had to come and stop him from doing tapasya. So that's the whole idea there. I mean to say, Brahma was not really impressed by his tapasya. He was impressed as a matter of fact of determination, but he was not really happy with that. And he was forced to come, because the whole heaven was about to burn and it was like shaking like anything. So he wanted to stop Hiranyakashipu from doing tapasya. So tapasya has a lot of power. Tapasya automatically brings power. That's the whole idea there. You don't have to, you don't have to please anybody. If you do tapasya, you get powers. That's the nature of tapasya. That's how laws of nature work. If we do austerities, automatically powers come. Just like in Bhagavatam, it is said, if you speak truth, Prabhupada writes, if you speak truth for 12 years, no untruth, no false, then 12 year first day, whatever you speak, that will happen. If you say, let the mountain jump into the ocean, mountain will jump into ocean. That will happen. You will become Satyavak. Whatever you say, it will happen. So that's the whole idea there. Brahmaji, he went to Hiranyakashipu because Hiranyakashipu was doing tapasya, and by tapasya he became powerful. He became so powerful that he could actually burn the heavenly planets along with all the demigods. Just right being there at that same spot, he didn't have to go even fight with the demigods. And Brahma was thinking something has to be done. We have to stop him. And the only way to stop him is, Hiranyakashipu, I'm happy with you and I'm going to give you a bone. Then that was the only way. There is no other way. Even you see that, who was that? Who actually asked Lord Shiva Bhun that anybody's head I will put my hand, let him burn to ashes.
Vrikasura.
Vrikasura. Oh, really?
Vrikasura.
Okay, Vrikasura.
Taliyavan.
No. Vrikasura might be.
Vrikasura is also called
Bhasmasura. Yeah. Actually, Bhasmasura. Yeah, Bhasmasura. So Bhasmasura, he did tapasya. He became
very powerful. Bhasmasura is correct.
So he became powerful and Lord Shiva came and he asked for a boon. Whomever I put my hand on the head, let him burn. Shiva gave him the boon. And he wanted to test on Shiva himself. So you might ask, why did Shiva come and give the boon to such a stupid person? Well, these demigods have to come. Because if they continue their tapasya, their tapasya can actually disturb the laws of nature. That's the nature of tapasya. So these demigods have to come to stop them from doing tapasya. So that's the power of tapasya. It can even force demigods to appear in front of you. Now, but tapasya has, if you want to force demigods to appear, your tapasya has to be extraordinary. Like I meant to say, if you just fast for 5 days in Bhishma Panchak and don't eat anything, and then you think you can force Indra to appear, that's not going to happen. Or if you just fast 1 day and 2 days without water and you just sit there, you know, and nothing is going to happen. Tapasya has to be of this level. So Brahmaji even says in the next verse, even saintly Bhrigu could not perform such severe austerities like you, Hiranyakashipu. Anyone in future will be able to do so. Who within these 3 births can sustain his life without even drinking water for 100 celestials? Hiranyakashipu did tapasya for 100 celestial years. Celestial, 100 celestial years, how much? 100 celestial years is, that means 1 celestial year is how much?
12,000.
12,000 years? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, maybe you're right. So 100 celestial years, it's like lakhs of millions of years, you know. Hiranyakashipu was sitting in millions of years in his bones, would circulate his life here in bones. What kind of tapasvi he might be? So that level of tapasya, Shukracharya, he did tapasya for, I think, 12,000 celestial years. He was hanging upside down. I think 12,000 years he did. And 12,000 years and he was hanging upside down and he lit a fire beneath him and he was drinking the smoke of that fire. It comes in Bhagavatam. And that's why he became very powerful. So then Lord Shiva appeared and he got his boon. So that's these, I mean, these people can do such kind of tapasya. In Kali Yuga, we can't even, it's not a choice that we'll not do such kind of tapasya. We can't do, that's all. We are incapable of doing any kind of tapasya. That's why Chaitanya Prabhu says, Nastev, 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 Anyatha. The only way in this Kali Yuga is Harinam. There is no other way. even if we want to do Dhyan Yoga and Karma Yoga, it's not possible in this Kali. To do Karma Yoga, we have to be absolutely righteous. And to do Dhyan Yoga, we have to be extremely physically fit and mentally fit to go in forest and do some kind of tapasya. So having said that, if you look at Hiranyakashipu, all the yogis of this world today, they will be like, I mean to say, if Hiranyakashipu comes in now, all the big yogis, they'll become a student, isn't it? All of the yogis who are saying, you know, learn yoga and this, they'll all become students of Hiranyakashipu. Because they don't care, you know, whether they believe in God or not. They like yoga, and Hiranyakashipu will become extremely famous in Kali Yuga if he opens a yoga school. If he wants to open a yoga school, even Hiranyakashipu's disciples, they will, or maybe all the yoga masters, they are Hiranyakashipu's disciples, who knows? You know? I don't know, I'm just speculating, but maybe. So, I don't know. The one idea of this verse is Brahmaji, he came to Hiranyakashipu because he was forced, one reason. He was forced to save demigods. That was a force. It is not that he's forced. Hiranyakashipu is in tapasya, so I have to go. No. The demigods were in danger, so he had to go to help them. And the second thing he came to give darshan to Hiranyakashipu was to escalate his destruction, make him more proud by giving him such kind of boon. A curse in disguise in form of a boon. And the third point why Brahmaji came and gave darshan to Hiranyakashipu was because he's astonished to see his endurance. But that was not the reason he came, because he was impressed by his tapasya. The reason was he came because he wanted to actually stop Hiranyakashipu finding tapasya so that he becomes more powerful. So that if he could continue tapasya, he would have become more and more and more powerful. So Brahmaji wanted to stop him. So that's what Madhvacharya comments in his commentary. Sometimes demigods, they want to stop the progress of the candidate. It's not just demons they want to stop. Even demigods want to stop the progress. Hiranyakashipu, he was doing tapasya. Shambhuk was doing tapasya in Ramayana. And Lord Rama killed him. He was doing tapasya. Shambhuk. What's the harm? Lord Rama came and killed him. And he said, well, he was doing tapasya, but his motive was wrong. That's why I killed him. I have to stop him doing tapasya. Although tapasya is good in one sense, at least you're not involved in sense gratification. At least tapasya stops sense gratification. But at the same time, demigods sometimes they stop good things also. Sometimes Bhakti Thakur comments, demigods even stops the devotion of the candidate. They don't allow any person to advance more than his adhikar. That's also the point Madhvacharya comments. So if some spiritual aspirant, he is actually advancing very fast, then sometimes demigods will put hurdle on their path to actually test them. First of all, test their devotion, and second of all, to actually slow their speed. Now you might say, why demigods are servants of Vishnu? Why they want to slow the speed of the candidate, spiritual person? Well, they want to slow the speed because they know if that person advances very fast, then he might meet an accident. He might become very proud. So sometimes demigods, they arrange such circumstances that the spiritual practitioner, he will do offenses. Sometimes it happens, Madhvacharya says. And his advancement is slowed down. So that person is toned up. And also, in the process, he will learn so many things. To make him learn so many other things. So that's also the point about demigods. So here Brahmaji comes and gives darshan to Hiranyakashipu for stopping him advancing in austerities. It seems wrong, but it is the point, because he knew if Hiranyakashipu continues like this, he'll become extremely powerful and then it will be impossible for any demigod to defeat him. Even it will be impossible even for Brahma to defeat him. He would become so powerful, so he had to come in and stop him from advancing. And that's why he came in, and he had to give a boon which was like never been heard and never been spoken by anybody. He got that boon, and Nagashibu became such a powerful person, and everybody got afraid of him. Now, if Brahmaji would have left Hiranyakashipu like that, Hiranyakashipu would automatically become powerful. So why did Brahmaji come and then give boon and make him powerful? That's the question. The answer to this, there's one common sense answer to this. And the answer is, well, if Hiranyakashipu would have become very powerful by his own tapasya, then, and not by the blessings of Brahmaji, then it would have been the ultimate chaos in universe, then it would have been a disaster in the universe. So Brahmaji came and he gave the boon, and Hiranyakashipu became powerful. And at least Hiranyakashipu had in this mind, he wanted to kill Vishnu, but he had in this mind, okay, Brahmaji, he is my respectable deity. At least he used to worship Brahmaji. Just like Raman used to worship Lord Shiva. So at least these demons, somehow they were worshipping some demigods, and they were not outright materialist and atheist, so accepting no one. They were not like that. So that's the whole point there about Hiranyakashipu's austerities. Brahmaji coming. Brahmaji said, "You are keeping your life here circulating within your bones." Interesting. We can't even keep our life here circulating in our body. And he kept in bones. And this is, by the way, this is all the power of pranayama. Pranayama is so powerful. By this whole yogic process, asanas and pranayama. Pranayama is so powerful that by pranayama you can actually go in trance and you can do so many magical and miraculous feats. And this Christ, Prabhupada mentioned the Christ. Christ actually, after 3 days after death, he again rose up from his grave. Prabhupada says in the purport, Christ had these powers. So he was not killed on cross. He went into trance. And they thought he died. At least according to one archaeologist. And they proved from Bible that he went into trance and he was kept in the cave. And then after 3 days, he came back again. So people get impressed by all these things. If somebody does like that, they will get impressed, and then people say, you know, what about these devotees? They simply chant and dance and they eat like crazy. And on the other hand, these yogis, you know, they're doing tapasya and doing so many miraculous feats, flying in air and going in samadhi and not eating anything. Definitely, that's very impressive. Definitely, but that's impressive to people who are on bodily concept of life. But people who are having spiritual vision, as Bhakti Sananda used to say, even a neophyte devotee ringing bell in the temple is much, much, much far advanced than the person or than the yogi who is sitting in the cave for thousands of years and doing and in samadhi and doing meditation. That's the faith we have. That's the faith we have. Even a tiny servant of Vishnu is far, far more greater than big yogis. And what is the credit of that neophyte? The credit is he has surrendered to Vishnu. That's the credit. The Supreme Person. He has understood the Supreme Person. He has understood. He has having faith in him. That's his credit. So that's how this whole scheme is there in this verse. And we can think over it. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Anything anybody wants to ask? Any question? Very good.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. Very nice class, Pranji, as usual. With all the pastimes you narrated so nicely. Prahladan and Prabhupada, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Patan. And just Prabhuji, I just wanted to add a little realization that, you know, that we just now say that, you know, the devotee is perfect in that way. And Bhagavan Krishna says, Samyak Vyavati Kohisa. His understanding is properly perfect that he has taken shelter of Lord Sri Krishna. Apite Sudurajaro Bhadate Mam Maranya Bhak Padurin Samantha. Samyak Vyavati Kohisa. So that Samyak Vyavati is the devotee is more perfect in his understanding than all these yogis and that's all. Thank you.
Not able to hear properly. Sound.
Anyway, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. Shukrakar Krishna Prabhu. Yeah, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna Keshavan Prabhu. As usual, a wonderful class. So you told one thing that he can burn the whole heavenly planet. That means all asuras will understand, no, by doing big tapasya, they can burn out the heavenly planet and Indra and all.
That's why all demons are doing austerities.
So this is like a Sudarshan Chakra for them. They can just burn out.
Yeah, yeah. Demons, that's why always they are into austerities and to defeat demigods.
But austerity with wrong goals, not for the pleasure of the Lord. That is the missing point.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
But Dhruva Maharaj also did austerity. He didn't have a demoniac mentality, but he wanted to become the bigger than his Brahman. He wanted to become bigger than Swayambhu. He wanted to...
Yeah. He was not that bad, his desires. Well, that's why Vishnu, he came and he corrected it. He was not envious of Vishnu. He wanted to ask Vishnu this point. But demons, they want to kill Vishnu. That's the whole difference.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji. Shivakumar, Prabhuji, please.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. And our Trams, Prabhu. Prabhu, you talked about this austerity disturbing the super soul. I think there is also this sloka in Bhagavad Gita, I remember, Prabhu. I don't know which chapter is that. So one basic question I have, Prabhu, do the pleasure and pain, does it really affect even soul, Prabhu? In which case, I'm finding it difficult to understand how does it even affect super soul, Prabhu, the austerity itself?
Well, super soul also, it doesn't affect, but if super soul perceives everything, I mean to say, it's the other way around. We can't perceive without perception of super soul. First information goes to super soul and then it comes to us. Otherwise, we can't perceive. So, super soul can exactly know what we feel, what happiness and distress we are undergoing. Exactly knows. So he, when a devotee, when a demon does tapasya and he tortures himself, the super soul is actually unhappy. By seeing that this person is just destroying himself unnecessarily. So in that sense, he's tortured.
Okay. Prabhu, thanks, Prabhu. This clears the doubt. But just one general question, Prabhu. Even the speaking of our soul, Prabhu, the pleasure and pain, does it even affect the soul literally or physically in any way? Or my understanding was it just stops at the level of mind and cross body, Prabhu. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, the Why? I mean, so my mind is living or dead?
Mind is jada, right, Prabhu? It is alive because of the presence of soul only, right, Prabhu? That's my understanding.
So anything dead, it cannot feel and think and will, isn't it?
Okay.
So it's everything is happening with soul.
Okay. So, Prabhu, you are saying the soul is also part of the pleasure and pains of this world, Prabhu. Is that the understanding?
Yeah, otherwise, who is feeling pleasure and pain? It's not the mind, it's not the body. Everything is dead. Soul is undergoing pleasure, no?
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you are saying that the soul will have the pleasure and the pain. So that's why we are experiencing it. That's what you are saying, right?
Yeah.
So, but when Jada Bharat, when he is instructing to King Rahugana, he says that he gives that example of the pot and the milk in the pot. So he says that whatever it is there, it's only for the physical body. Whatever happens, it's only for the physical body. The soul is never changeable. So how to understand that, Prabhuji? It doesn't affect the soul. Means whatever we feel here in this world, it's just for the physical body we are having, for the desires we are having.
Doesn't affect the soul in the sense that soul experiences pleasure and pain of this world, but soul never forgets that it is servant of Lord. In that way, it is not affected. I mean to say, it can never happen that soul will forget that I am servant of God. I have to serve Krishna. Soul always remember that. Now, temporarily, we might be distracted. The soul might be distracted temporarily by the pleasure and pains of the material world. But inside soul, there is always this knowledge that it is servant of God. So in that sense, it is not affected. So that's why by spirituality, we can again revive our dominant Krishna consciousness.
Okay.
So that way.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhuji. Sri Shopanishad Mataji, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Hari Bol. Thank you so very much for the wonderful realization about the powers of the holy name. And in this age that we're now living, you can actually see the effect that the demigods are really interacting with so many things that could have been out of control. We can see that they are actually involved with what's going on in the world today. And our tapasya, our power is in the holy name. So thank you for bringing that to the attention in a way where we can identify with it in now times and what we're dealing with today.
If
you want to have power like Haranya Kasipu, or we're having our power, our satna is in the holy name, and we just have to chant. We just have to chant, you know, and be happy. Hare Bol, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you so much. There's a question in the chat, Prabhuji. So it's by Radha Jyoti Mataji. So she's asking, Krishna is pleased by loving devotion service, and in devotion service also has austerities, which means the devotion service is meant as austerities. The tapasya we are undertaking. How should we understand this? Can you please elaborate on this point? That's
the question. What's that? The tapasya we are undertaking?
Devotion service is meant as austerity.
Yeah, so?
So, how should we understand this? That is what Mataji's question is.
Well, devotion service is austerity in the sense, tumara seva hai sukho icho. Bhakti Thakur says, oh my Lord, in your service, whatever distress I have, that is my happiness. So our austerity is taking distress to actually increase the service of Krishna, if that's required. If it's required, sufferings are required to serve Krishna, we accept them heartily, and that is our austerity in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada also writes in one of his purport, following Ekadashi, getting up for Mangal Arati, you know, doing fasting on festivals, that's also our austerity. Srila Prabhupada also writes in one purport, taking risk in preaching, that's also austerities. And ultimately, Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Devotion that that to always remember Krishna and never forget him, that's the ultimate austerity. That's difficult in the mind. So all these things are there, and that's why we can. This is the understanding of austerities within devotional realm.
Okay, so the thing is, whatever it is favorable for bhakti, we can do it. So as an austerity. So, but exceedingly that is not needed. So that's what.
Yeah. Whatever is favorable for devotional service, if we don't like it, still we do it, that's austerity.
Yes. Especially waking up early in the morning. So, there is one more question from Mataji. She is asking, few yogic bodies, even after death, the brain is working. How we understand that?
You cannot understand. That's all. It's yogic powers. It's beyond understanding.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. So, very nice class, as usual. So, mentioning about the austerities. Okay. So, finally, it is just Anukojana Sankalpa Krishna Anushilanam. So, thank you so much. So, dear devotees, let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji. Thank you, Prabhuji, for your time and
association.
Hare Krishna.